It's 6 after 9. Good morning. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network. Back in 1968, the 90th United States Congress passed legislation authorizing the Great Lakes Basin Compact. 37 years later, in 2005, the governors of the 8 states in the basin signed the compact. Then the state legislatures took over. For the most part, this compact has had wide bipartisan support. Everyone seems to agree that the Great Lakes require protection, and this compact has been discussed, analyzed, debated, and scrutinized for many years. Now, with almost all the Great Lakes Basin state legislatures on board, Wisconsin and Ohio, Republicans want to reopen the compact and make changes. Well, this hour we're going to take a look at the Great Lakes Compact and talk about what it means for Wisconsin. To help us understand the issues involved, we've asked State Senator Bob Jauch, a Democrat from Poplar, to join us, and you can too. Here are the numbers, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. That's a toll-free number from just about anywhere. Doesn't work in Australia, I'm told. In Milwaukee, please use our local number, 227-2050, 227-2050, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Good morning, Senator Jauch. Thanks for making yourself available this morning.
Well, good morning, John. If you'd only allow it from Australia, I'd think about going over there to make my call.
Well, you know, I used to say that the number was good anywhere you could hear my voice, and then I got an email from somebody in Australia saying, "Hey, good day, mate. Doesn't work here." So I had to put in that little caveat there. Okay. First of all, give our audience the Cliff's Notes version of what the Great Lakes Compact is all about. What's it supposed to do?
Well, excuse me, John. First of all, it's the single most important environmental document in history that has been designed to protect the world's greatest freshwater resource. The Great Lakes contain 20% of the world's freshwater. And the compact was signed, as you said, a little over 2 years ago, following 5 years of discussions and negotiations by the 8 Great Lakes governors, agreed to by the two Canadian provinces that border the Great Lakes, to give a meaningful authority for the states to manage the Great Lakes resource, but most importantly, for once and for all, a ban long-distance, large-scale diversions that can threaten the Great Lakes. As those of us who live along the Great Lakes, and my district covers the entire Lake Superior shoreline from Superior to Saxon Harbor, it is 90 miles of absolutely inspiring, breathtaking beauty. We understand the stress that Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, and the other Great Lakes are under. Lake Superior is at low water levels, breaking a historical low water level. They were almost 20 inches below. The other Great Lakes states are anywhere from a foot to 2 feet below. It's severely impairing the quality of the resource and threatening the resource and the watershed. Number two, and this is even more dangerous, is that water-starved states in southeastern United States and southwestern Wisconsin, populated areas that are going to gain population in the next census and gain political clout, are thirsting for our water. They are extremely dry, and they would love to be able to pipe that water from our region to their region to support their lives. We must take the appropriate steps, both to utilize the resource for its recreational, ecological, and economical importance to our communities, but also prevent these wide-scale diversions, which could do severe harm to the Great Lakes.
How does Wisconsin benefit directly from the Great Lakes Compact?
Well, first of all, to go back, John, you started your remarks by pointing out that we are governed by the Water Resources Development Act. That is a congressional act that is weak, inadequate, and does not give Wisconsin or our communities adequate opportunity to carefully utilize our water resources. In addition, it does not effectively give Wisconsin the opportunity to protect its resources from these wide-scale diversions. There are only three ways in which water decisions with the Great Lakes are going to be made. Because Wisconsin doesn't own the waters within our borders, and Michigan within its borders, and New York and Indiana and Ohio, and likewise, water flows, and it's a completely accepted belief that the waters, the public trust document, that the waters are the waters of the state. The fact is that so we can't. So one of the ways in which the states can manage their resource is through a compact. The second is that the courts will make the decision, and in many cases, they're going to make the decision that is not in the interest of the resource or of the states. Number three, that the United States Congress will make that decision. Anybody watching Congress ought to be frightened about that aspect, unless you give them a compact for them to ratify. In the next election, the Great Lakes region is expected to lose anywhere from 10 to 15 seats. They're going to move to the southeast and the southwest, and it becomes less likely for us to be able to have the political influence to get the right kind of decision to manage that resource to protect our interests. So the bottom line is the compact is clearly the way in which we have the most effective way to come on with, to come up with agreed-upon principles and standards and manage that that water.
Now, the language of the compact and the structure of the compact and so forth, this information has been out there for quite a while. It's not like this just showed up on the doorstep of the Wisconsin legislature last week. How long have we known about the contents of the proposed agreement between these eight basin states?
Well, the compact itself was negotiated over a 4.5-year period of time. During that period of time, there were over 150 days of formal review and comment. There were more than 60 public meetings. More than 13,000 comments were received. More than 100 different and diverse groups have endorsed the compact legislation. And as you indicated, John, there have now been four states that have adopted the compact. It has become law. And in the respective legislatures, the support has been overwhelming following public hearings and lengthy discussion. The vote has been 941-61. 941-61, and in Ohio, the suspect state that our assembly leadership feels inclined to follow, the state assembly passed it 87-5. So clearly, there has been overwhelming interest, support, and active involvement. In Wisconsin, the Legislative Council Committee was chaired by Senator Kedsey, met for close to a year with a diverse group of participants, well attended. They did not reach a consensus. However, their work became quite a bit of the product that is of the bill draft that we will soon be debating. There have been hundreds of hours of public discussions. Almost every major newspaper in the state has actively encouraged the legislature to adopt the compact, recognize the urgency for us to act. There's just overwhelming momentum. So it is really quite perplexing and frustrating that all of a sudden at this 11th hour, after we've done this in such a responsible, nonpartisan, non-political way, that all of a sudden a few ideologues in Ohio are being used to block it. It is quite stunning.
Well, I was coming to that. Last week, Assembly Speaker Hipsch and fellow Republican Scott Gunderson made public a letter that they wrote to State Senator Bill Harris of Ohio, who you referred to. Senator Harris has been an opponent of this compact, and we'll get to his reasons in a little bit. The thrust of the letter seemed to indicate they felt that somehow or other private property rights were going to be threatened by the compact, and they wanted changes made. I must confess that I didn't quite understand what they were talking about. Can you offer an explanation?
Well, I can't either, because it's not logical.
Well, this is going to be a real short program then, Bob.
I've got plenty to say about it, and hopefully we'll generate some conversation in listeners. Very, very frankly, two things frustrated me. One is, John, that Senator Miller, the chair of the Environmental Resources Committee, and the governor and the legislators that have been working on this diligently, Corey Mason from Racine, John Lehman from Racine, John Richards from Milwaukee, Rob Coles, a Republican from the Green Bay area, all have been intent on doing what is in common good for Wisconsin. We haven't used Republican, Democrat, tried to leverage this issue in partisan ways at all. And so to come up with this, at this stage, this 11th hour attempt that will kill the compact is really quite frustrating. So it isn't partisan politics that may kill the compact. It's pathetic politics that is based upon mythology and misrepresentation of reality. Let me just say that there are two arguments that they are making regarding the compact. The one is that they're arguing that the compact creates single veto power over water diversions, negating Wisconsin's sovereignty as a state. This is a red herring argument by the Flat Earth Society, who conveniently ignore the current law. In the Wisconsin, or the Water Resources Development Act, WRDA, governors have that authority. It isn't created in the compact. But what the compact does is that it substantially improves the opportunity for states to be able to meet certain criteria and principles and standards that strengthens state powers, and it protects Wisconsin by giving it more autonomous authority to make decisions regarding Great Lakes water. And it's especially important for straddling communities in southeastern Wisconsin, in New Berlin, Kenosha, Waukesha, in particular, where they have some drinking water concerns.
Yeah, and I want to talk about those communities specifically, and the straddling communities, and that kind of local water diversion issue that seems to have popped up. But we need to take a break, right. And I want to give the phone numbers again, because we do want to invite people to join our conversation and talk about this issue. So let me just give the phone numbers. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about those straddling communities and how that fits into this compact issue. 800-486-8655 is the number to call. It's toll-free from, let's just say anywhere in the continental 48 United States. 227-2050 is the local number if you are in Milwaukee. 800-486-8655, 227-2050. We're talking about the Great Lakes Compact and what it means for Wisconsin, what's going on with it. There is a discussion in the state legislature, and now there's all of a sudden there seems to be some controversy over an issue that didn't seem controversial a week ago. And we're exploring that with State Senator Bob Jauch this hour, and you're welcome to join us with your comments or questions. And by the way, you can also reach us via the Internet. Send an email talk at WPR.org. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just about 9:22, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up later on today. After 5 o'clock tonight on At Issue with Ben Marins, the Wisconsin state budget is at risk of deficit as the economy cools. Ben Marins and his guest after 5 discuss the issues facing Wisconsin and its budget. That's after 5 o'clock today on At Issue with Ben Marins. This hour, we're talking about the Great Lakes Compact. What is it? What does it mean for Wisconsin? Why is it suddenly controversial? And what's at stake here? And there's lots of questions about the timing of getting this compact approved and having to do with the upcoming 2010 census and the shifting populations in the United States, all sorts of things going on with this. Here's, once again, let me give the phone numbers before we get back to our guest, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 in Milwaukee. It's a local call for you, 227-2050, 227-2050. My guest is State Senator Bob Jauch. He's a Democrat from Poplar. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should mention that I live in Senator Jauch's district. There, got that out of the way. Don't want anybody, you know, saying I'm not being completely honest here. Okay, you mentioned just before the break, and I'm sorry I had to cut you off there. I wanted to get the break in before we got in the middle of that subject, because there's some things about this that are a little complicated when you start to look at specific instances. And you mentioned we have some communities that straddle the line between being in the basin, in the watershed of the there's a divide where the water goes at some point, it goes one direction or the other, and we've got some communities that are kind of right on the border. And this agreement could have some effect in terms of where they get their water. Let's talk about that a little bit, and then we've actually got some callers who are popping up on the screen, so we'll get some questions here shortly.
Well, let me just briefly address the straddling communities issue, John, and then get to the questions. Number one, this has been a very important issue for Wisconsin, because in the communities, as I indicated, like Waukesha, New Berlin, Kenosha, these are communities that are right on the border of the basin in which the water is either in the Mississippi watershed or flows back into the Lake Michigan watershed. Two of these communities in particular, Waukesha and New Berlin, have radium in their waters and have a desperate need to find a different water supply. It is in their public health interests that the state of Wisconsin find the means by which there would be an opportunity for them to have alternative, safe drinking water for their community. The compact has been in under WRDA. The likelihood of getting water to Waukesha is slim to none. New Berlin, the compact really is the essential document, because in the writing of the compact, in the agreement of the compact, Wisconsin was very successful in including a set of standards for that straddling communities would be eligible for diversions. In other words, a diversion outside the basin, but for a community that's partially in the basin, outside the diversion, if they met a certain number of standards, conservation standards, for example. It's limited to residential use. And thirdly, the water would have to be returned, so the wastewater flow would have to be returned to the basin. So there's a number of principles that are in place that really strengthen the ability of these communities and are essential for these communities. So it's very puzzling for me that legislators who represent those parts of you would be taking a position to blow up the opportunity to get drinking water to those communities when I live so far away, and I tend to understand why it's important to them. So it's a very, very important issue. I think Wisconsin legislation, which is indeed complicated, well over 140 pages, could be 180 pages in the end, very complicated document, but the draft that is going to be available this week was partial draft released last week, and there'll be a public hearing this week later in southeastern Wisconsin on it. We believe there's going to be very strong support for the work that we have done to deal with straddling communities, protect diversions, reasonably and responsibly allow water, but protect that resource.
Well, we actually have a caller on from New Berlin, and let's take that call now. We'll go to Irene. Irene, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to ask I have a couple of questions. I live in New Berlin between County Line Road and Sunny Slope, so we get Milwaukee water. In addition to that, I have a well on my property, which when we bought the house, was tested and everything. I do not use it for drinking, but I do use it for watering the lawn and washing the car. And I'm also wondering if that well affects the Lake Michigan level, or is that just groundwater?
Well, you're going to get into the science here, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on that. But there is a relationship between groundwater and the basins in Floyd. In Wisconsin has because we respect. Let me go back. Groundwater is regulated under the Wisconsin groundwater legislation, and as such, it is considered to be waters of the state and is carefully managed and in order to protect the resource but protect the property rights of those who have it. So your well is not – you're going to be able to continue to use your – if you chose to use your well as you did before. The compact legislation is not going to. If I understand where you may be going with your question, it is: are you going to? Is the compact somehow going to prevent you from using well water?
I think Irene, are you still there?
Michigan. If we come to that point where we're going to have to restrict our water,
right,
then I can use the well. But does that initially affect Lake Michigan's level?
Well, I don't know enough about the groundwater in that area to be able to accurately answer your question. The issue that is being raised in Ohio is that somehow individuals, the state is going to come in and this compact is going to unduly regulate individuals' personal property rights. And the fact of the matter is it is not. Let me just be as simple as that. Whether and where that water flows in your community, I can't answer that question. I just don't know.
Irene, thank you for the call. Let's see. Let's take a call next from John in Chicago. John, you're
Hi.
Up.
Yeah. I wasn't originally going to comment on this, but I guess you could. I'm a water resources engineer, and The lady from New Berlin, actually, the wells all along the western shore of Lake Michigan, in that area, Lake Michigan is a losing water body, which means that groundwater is drawing water out of Lake Michigan, not replenishing it, which would be sort of the normal function under natural conditions. Groundwater would actually be feeding Lake Michigan, but in those areas, in Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, Chicago. Actually, the water is being drawn out of essentially the bottom of Lake Michigan to feed wells. And I guess the reason why I called is that my concern with having a consortium and sort of the power of the consortium being thrust more towards states is that seems to me that opens up each individual state to set a precedent for water diversion that may not be in the interest of the watershed as a whole, and that, you may have, for whatever reason, a certain governmental structure in that particular state or province that allows for a significant diversion to happen, and then other entities in the future could then point to that and say, well, they did it, so why can't we do it? I think that until all water conservation measures have been taken place, unfortunately, the argument that there's radium in the groundwater being drawn from communities just outside the basin, in my view, just is not valid until those communities are doing everything they can to conserve water. I mean, we're learning with greenhouse gases and other ways that we're utilizing our natural resources that the solution is not to produce and withdraw more natural resources. The solution is to first conserve as much as we can, and then, if necessary, draw more natural resources.
I don't disagree at all with that premise. And I think one of the underlying principles in this, in the compact, in the implementing language, is the emphasis on conservation. There's going to be a very high standard for conservation. We ought to be, by the way, considering conservation and reviewing our water practices throughout the state, not just in the Great Lakes Basin, because we can't assume that water is forever going to be there. And part of this document includes baseline information so that we can understand water use throughout the state of Wisconsin. Now, a couple of points. Clearly, if the compact were written about 100 years ago, that Chicago diversion would not be approved. But it is something that happened a long time ago. Some of this utilization of Great Lakes water is essential for our drinking water, for our daily living requirements, industrial use, municipal uses, and the like. The fact is that the compact strengthens the standards to come up with a consistent set of principles that can be followed. Clearly, the test that New Berlin or Waukesha or any other straddling community is going to have to meet is going to be a very, very high standard. Now, one thing that Wisconsin is doing that other states are not doing is in the compact. They've ratified the compact. Wisconsin is, in fact, laying out the implementing language so that you and others will understand how this is going to work. So from the beginning, we begin to realize how we're going to make options and the conditions that are going to be required by communities and others who wish to utilize our water. And anything beyond that threshold clearly is going to fall under. In other words, those conditions we believe we can manage as a state. Anything that exceeds them are subject to the veto of the other governors or a governor in another state, and we believe that's the way it should be.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Let's take a call next from Dan in White Lake. Good morning.
As an old sailor on the Great Lakes, I sailed from 1957 to 2005. And just to shed some light on this situation, for the last 15 or 20 years, all the boats have been sailing light. The 1,000-footers that are the big ore carriers were built right here in Sturgeon Bay. They would like to sail at a depth of 30 feet, but they can't. They're all sailing about, it's approximately Duluth to Chicago or Duluth to Cleveland is something like a week turnaround trip. They're making about 40, 45 trips a year, 10,000 tons light each trip from what they could. And in my experience, we sunk the Indiana Harbor at the dock in Escanaba one time and had to wait 2 days for another ship to come alongside so we could use our unloading system to take 10,000 tons of taconite pellets off and put it into a different ship that pulled up on the other side of the dock. Lake Erie is so shallow that if the west wind picks up, people have to stop loading coal in Ashtabula, Ohio, and get out of there because the ship will be sunk at the dock if they load it full because the wind will blow the water away from the dock. And another problem that needs to be dealt with is quite a number of years ago, the Lake St. Clair connects Lake Huron and the Detroit River. And it was dredged by the Army Corps of Engineers in order to try and maintain a finished depth of 30 feet, but they dug it deeper, and it was supposed to be lined with rocks. The rock part of the project was canceled because they ran out of money. Because of the flushing action of the lakes, that channel has now washed itself out to a depth of 60 feet, and Lakes Michigan and Huron are running out through that channel. That needs to be corrected as fast as possible, or shipping on Lakes Michigan and Lake Huron and Lake Superior is going to stop. We're going to lose those lakes. If you think they've dropped now, they're going to drop another 8 or 10 feet. Lake Superior is something of an entity unto itself because it's backed up by the locks at Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. But Huron and Michigan are flushing out through the overdredged and overflushed channel in Lake St. Clair. And now that I've had my little say, maybe you know a little more about it. Bye.
Well, Thank you for enlightening us.
I really appreciate that perspective. You're absolutely right that there have been some man-made mistakes that have contributed to the lowering of lake levels in Lake Michigan, for example, in Huron. In Lake Superior, it is a natural phenomenon that has been accelerated by climate change, which is partially man-made. The fact is that in Superior, we're 20 inches below record levels. It is not only the lake levels that are dropping, affecting commercial shipping. My understanding that ships were loading at about 60 to 65% of capacity. Thereby, they're losing all their profits just because of the lake levels, and then they have to make more runs, as you indicate. But the watershed has been severely impacted. Last year, the Bad River Indian Tribe canceled wild rice harvesting for the first time in history because the wild rice beds in the Caucagan Slough, water levels were so low that those beds were in severe jeopardy. So this is starting to have a really impact on our watershed, which is drying up. And any other large, unmanaged diversions will accelerate this decline that the caller referred to. So these are all good reasons for us to step up our efforts now, and that there's an urgent urgency for us to act, not delay.
Dan, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Stella, you're on.
Hi. excuse me. Senator, I didn't catch your last name, but I heard you expressing, when you were talking earlier, expressing a great puzzlement over why this turn of events has come about in terms of opposition to ratifying the compact in our state legislature. And I remember hearing a program on WPR a couple years ago about very deep-pocketed, very powerful interests doing their utmost to get water commoditized rather than being considered a natural resource. And I wondered, my question was, have you followed the money back behind this opposition?
No, actually not in this case. There has been such strong positive participation by industrial users and municipal users and Republicans and Democrats that I think, unlike many of these other issues, this isn't one of these typical political special interest dominated matters. That's what's puzzling, is that we have been moving ahead with we have tried to departisanize it, take the politics out of it, and do what is right for the common good, because this is important for not only Wisconsin, but for the Midwest and the Great Lakes. To have two legislators, the assembly leader, take a position that is so out of touch with the average citizen, with the average participant, with the average legislator from around the country, is really deprives logic. It is really hard to understand the position that he has taken, because he's relying on moonbeam mentality to argue. Wisconsin, the compact didn't create single governor veto. There's already single governor veto. This gives power to Wisconsin that we don't already have. This is important to the resource. And the fact is that if the speaker goes ahead with this illogical effort, it will kill the compact for this year and may kill it altogether. And that's what's most unfortunate. Now, the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce have, up to this point, opposed it. They've raised questions, but frankly, in conversations, they have acknowledged that there may be some workable solutions. In Ohio, the Ohio Manufacturers and Commerce have said, we think that the problems are workable. So I don't think it's money in this case. It's a mentality that's hard to understand. It's ideological delusion.
There's an article in I believe this is either Friday or Saturday, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, that talks about, kind of gives an overview of the pros and cons, the various opinions back and forth after some of the things that were said last week. Refers to something that Speaker Hipsch came forward with, concerns that the compact does not go far enough to protect economic interests in areas that lie beyond the Great Lakes Basin Divide, areas that have been typically, though not always, prohibited from tapping Great Lakes water. And he said it was a screaming red flag that the compact allows individual states to unilaterally deny Great Lakes water to Wisconsin communities that lie outside the Great Lakes Basin. So you're saying that that's not true.
They have a right to do that now. In other words, he's talking about Waukesha, New Berlin, and Kenosha. Those are the three communities. Those are the three straddling communities that are at risk if we don't have, that are most at risk if we don't adopt the compact. There's no economic development threat along the Lake Superior shoreline here or anywhere else along the Lake Michigan shoreline. Those are the three that are critical. The point is that the compact doesn't weaken our ability to protect our economic interest. It strengthens our economic ability. I fully expect that when this compact comes out of the state Senate, you will have a 28-5, if not a 30-3 vote in favor of it. That demonstrates that what the compact does is good for us. So he is taking a position that is very illogical, very indefensible. He talks of wanting a strong compact, yet this agreement he wants to sign with this legislator in Ohio. I wish he was, by the way, working with legislators in Wisconsin. He doesn't have to make a long-distance call to talk to us. And we've reached out to try to cooperate with him and anyone else on real solutions to this very complicated issue.
We're going to take some more calls, and a line will be opening up for you shortly. Let me give the phone numbers again. It's 800-486-8655. That's a toll-free number, 414-227-2050. Forget which studio I'm working in here today. You can join our discussion. You can send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're going to get to, I've got some more questions here I want to ask you that came out of some things that Speaker Hipsch said, Senator Jauch, and I want to get your take on that, particularly some economic issues he raised last week. And we've got just about full phone banks, so we should have an exciting last 15 minutes to the program here in this 9 o'clock hour. We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:45. Here's what's coming up later on the Ideas Network. All the presidential frontrunners are promising change. So what's the difference between campaign promises and change? After 3 on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, Jean Faraca and her guests discuss what's needed to convert campaign rhetoric into genuinely new policies. Well, that's the only mention of politics, presidential politics, you'll get in this hour of the program. Actually, next hour either. We're going to take a break from that this morning. Probably come back to it later in the week, though. This hour, we're talking about the Great Lakes Compact, what it means for Wisconsin, and what some of the political controversies are that are surrounding it at the moment. And Senator Jauch, just before the break, I mentioned I wanted to touch on a couple of other things that Speaker Hipsch had to say last week so that we can give that point of view at a hearing here. The Speaker contends that the compact puts Wisconsin at an economic disadvantage with Illinois and Michigan. The reason Illinois is exempt from major tenets of the compact because it reversed the flow of the Chicago River over a century ago, and you referred to that earlier in the program, and is now allowed to take 2.1 billion gallons a day from Lake Michigan. And Michigan will probably never have to worry about other states vetoing a request to take water outside the Great Lakes Basin because it lies almost entirely within the basin. And that also means that most all of the water Michigan takes from the lakes eventually flows back into the lakes. How do those things economically disadvantage Wisconsin?
Well, they don't change any current law. The Chicago diversion occurred over 100 years ago, and that's not going to be changed. The fact that Michigan doesn't have that that many straddling communities, Minnesota doesn't either, is no bearing at all. The fact of the matter is that Wisconsin does, and under existing law is inadequate and does not give Wisconsin sufficient opportunity to manage the resource and at the same time protect the economic and community interests of these communities. The compact strengthens the ability of Wisconsin to be able to give these communities the opportunity to have some access to the water at the same time that we are protecting these diversions way outside the region. So it's a straw, it's a red herring, the speaker knows it, and it's really a disguise to just opposing the compact.
Let's take some more calls here. We've got full phone banks, and so let's give people a chance to join in. We'll talk first to Lance in De Pere. Lance, good morning.
Good morning. I was just wondering, in the longer-term political battle for protecting the resource of the Great Lakes, if at some point, because almost all of the Great Lakes are bordered on Canada, if we can count on the Canadian government to help protect it, because it would be an international issue.
Well, Canada, the two provinces of Canada, indeed have agreed to the terms. They're not signatories of the compact because it is a binding document with sovereign states. But they are in agreement and share the same desires as the state governors who signed the compact to protect the resource. You might recall that it was several years ago that there was an attempt in Canada to ship water from the Canadian shores, and the Canadian government, came out in opposition to that. So there have been attempts in both Canada and the United States to either pipe the water out of the region or ship it in some fashion. So they share our desire to protect this resource.
Thanks for the call, Lance. Let's go next to Tom in Viroqua.
Yeah,
Tom, you're up.
Morning,
go ahead.
John, Senator Joe. I first learned about this issue in 2001 when I was out in Seattle for the WTO meeting out there and attended an international symposium on water diversion. And what became clear from there is without a firm compact among all parties involved, without exception, we become under WTO, World Trade Organization, and NAFTA rules, essentially vulnerable to anybody coming in with a profit motive to pipe, ship, divert water however they want, as far as they want, because, in fact, that then commodifies the water resource, and we as an individual state or even a national government, our hands are bound because of the agreements under these compacts. And the idea that a few legislators, for political reasons, whatever, would be so naive as to stand in the way of this is probably one of the greatest affronts to our local environmental resource and the overall economic future of the region.
Thank you. It's extremely well put. You stated it well. We are at risk of letting others who live outside the region, who have no regard to the resource, to exploit that resource as a commodity and damage it forever. We must act now.
Tom, thanks for that call. Let's go next to Mike in Racine.
Well,
go ahead, Mike, you're on.
That's a great segue, because that was one of the comments that I wanted to make as well, is that if we do not take control over this resource as Great Lakes states with a compact which is recognized both within the country as well as internationally, we run the risk of having others make that decision for us. Now, one of the concerns I have is that the senator earlier thought that this might not be a partisan issue, and I guess I beg to differ with him in that when you look at where the locus of concern is here from the assembly, the two assembly people we're talking about, is this is a Republican enclave, and they're worried about their development rights losing value, or their constituents or the people that are paying their bill, if you will, losing their development rights or losing value in their development rights. The reality is that there's a tremendous amount of land still yet to be developed in the Waukesha County area that if they aren't able to count on money or water coming from Lake Michigan in an unfettered way, then they're going to have to put that much more money into coming up and meeting criteria that are put under the compact. And, you know, they don't care. This is short-term economic gain is what has bodies of water around the world like Lake Baikal or the various reserves or reservoirs that are in the southeast part of the country and the western part of the country, getting themselves sucked dry for unfettered residential and light commercial development where there's no conscious act of saying, you know, at some point we have to build and develop based on the resource that we have at hand, not based on the resource that we can grab from somewhere else.
Well, that's extremely well stated, Mike. Let me just say that I'm not trying to go after the motives. I don't understand the motives of these lawmakers who live down in the area. I've talked to the mayor of Waukesha, mayor of Kenosha, mayor of Milwaukee, other local officials down there, industrial users, and I can tell you they desperately want to see the compact ratified in this implementing language adopted because they believe that they can meet the standards and principles, but see it as the only means by which there is some opportunity to have water resources for the region. So they're trying to protect the resource. At the same time, they are looking for a viable resource. Second, I just don't, when I talk about partisan, Senator Miller and myself and others that I had mentioned have been over backwards to not make this a partisan issue. And so it is really puzzling at this 11th hour why the Speaker of the Assembly decides to throw in this monkey wrench, which would kill it, because it's contrary to everything we've tried to do to depoliticize and let the legislature solve this problem. As one legislator told me, he's stunned because he thought this would be the one issue that could help define this legislature as one that's getting along and finally solving a problem. It appears as though the Assembly does not wish to govern.
Senator Jowkar, I assume you're familiar with the position of the Metropolitan Builders Association and their executive director, Matt Maroney.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the he sent out a memo. I was able to download it off the web about their position. That group seems to think that the compact would prevent economic development related to Lake Michigan and so forth. That seems to be the gist of it. And then they go on. There's about three or four pages of things that they question within the language of the compact. Do you want to briefly comment on that?
Well, first of all, it doesn't. It enhances economic development because this gives Wisconsin officials an opportunity it gives us a chance to get water. They won't be able to get water from the Great Lakes at all under existing law. And so this is going to strengthen their ability for economic development, community development, and meet community needs, but do it in a manageable way. It's the only way in which it can be done. Now, I have not talked with them lately to see what their position is on the latest draft. Some of the earlier positions were based upon misinformation and mythology and misunderstanding about the compact versus current law. Go back to your first point. The Wisconsin the Water Resources Development Act was adopted in 1986 that gives governors the authority to veto diversions across the watershed without any alternatives. The compact strengthens this governor, this state's ability to be able to make water available, and at the same time, we protect Great Lakes waters from diversions to other parts of the states or governors that are not responsible. This is an improvement, it gives us a great economic opportunity because one of our competitive advantages is water.
We've got just a little over a minute left in the hour. Boy, it goes by in a hurry. Real quick question here. A caller had asked about whether or not the compact would have any impact on the ability of bottling companies to have access to water.
Well, there are limitations on how much bottling companies can take. There are thresholds in the compact on how much water may be drawn on a daily basis. And if they're under a certain threshold, then they don't require a permit. If they're over a certain threshold, they require a permit. If they're over an even higher threshold, they may require approval from other states. But the thresholds are high enough to enable a reasonable amount of usage for utility companies and industrial users and the like. Remember that we do have a very strong groundwater legislation that that has underscored state authority. It's managed as a water of the state, and so therefore the combination of both will provide due protection for the resource, but at the same time enable certain activities to proceed if they are able to obtain permits.
Senator Jauch, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Thank you.
State Senator Bob Jauch, a Democrat from Poplar, represents northern Wisconsin along the shores of the greatest of the Great Lakes, Lake Superior. This program was Program 219D. It was produced by Rhonda Fanning. John Tretter answered the phones. If you'd like a copy of it, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444 and ask for Program 219D, as in dog. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.